Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Purdy Insurance. Visit Purdy Insurance on Market Street in Sunbury or visit online at purdyinsurance.com. Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
And today's show brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. Purdy's have served this valley for decades. Auto, home, life, business insurance. You name it, they have it. They have experts in all those areas. They want to make sure that you get the right insurance so you're covered. They also want to make sure you get it at the best price. And if there's a claim, they really go to work for you. You want to have great insurance partners and the best in the business, Purdy Insurance, Market Street in Sunbury. Please go to purdyinsurance.com. I'm in the Sunbury Motors studio. Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on this Monday. Time now for our play-by-play, should I say, Matt, calls of the day?
We'll go with calls of the day. Here's the first one that was, quote, respectfully submitted.
Back to pass, looking all the way to Titus. Pick six coming! Krieger! Good! Touchdown, Shikalemi! Krieger saw what I saw! He saw Shamori zoned in on 21, and the Deuce took it to the house!
So it wasn't a field goal.
So, okay, let me understand this now. He saw what I saw. Do we have to personalize everything? Deb's going to have a little bit of surgery. You know, I've had surgery. All right, it's like, okay, guy intercepts a pass. I guess, did he run it back for a touchdown? I guess he did, yeah, right?
Yes, he did.
And he saw what I saw. Do we have to personalize everything? you know, man, I've sat in that chair. I know what it's like to sit there. Instead of telling you, Matt, you know, you're doing a really great job. With the understanding that you already know that it's coming from somebody that has sat in the chair and understands the traffic.
Exactly.
I mean, Merrill Reese. Let's see if Merrill personalizes his play-by-play call of the day.
All right, here we go.
Wentz on third down takes a low snap. Here comes the rush. He steps up. He is floating it deep, and it is caught by Aguilar at the 20. Cuts back at the 10. At the 5, he is in for the touchdown. He falls backwards.
My God.
A 72-yard bomb to Aguilar.
All right, so let's do that again, Matt. Let's replay. Let's go with Merrill first.
Okay.
Okay. Wentz on third down takes a low snap. Here comes the rush. He steps up. He is floating it deep, and it is caught by Aguilar at the 20. Cuts back at the 10. At the 5, he is in for the touchdown. He falls backwards.
My God.
A 72-yard bomb to Aguilar.
All right, so now, let's go back to Friday night and listen to this one.
Back to pass, looking all the way to Titus. Pick six coming! Krieger! Good! Touchdown, Shikalemi! Krieger saw what I saw! He
Stop
saw Shamori zoned in on 21, and the Deuce took it to the house!
At one point did Merrill say that Carson Wentz saw what I saw?
Not one.
Merrill made it about the players, didn't he?
He did.
Yeah, about the moment.
Exactly.
In the second one, who appeared to be the dominant figure in the second one?
I'm guessing the person making the call is where you're going with this.
He saw what I saw. Okay. The difference is he's got the speed to get there. No, I'm just kidding. and this was respectfully submitted? This is somebody begging for the play-by-play call today?
Just going by what I was given, and that was, the quote exactly was, respectfully submitted.
Now, it's an exciting play, and it's a great call, except for the part where it always comes back to one person. I mean, the young man makes the play. It can't be about me, 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 can it?
I would guess not.
He's sitting in his office right now throwing things. I know he is. In fact, he's about to come down to the end of the hallway. This is where you're going to have to deal with him.
That's all good.
Are you sure?
That's all in good fun.
I know. We're having a good time with it. It was a great win for Shikalimi.
It was.
Especially in a town where, I mean, the suit needs a police escort to get in and out. I mean, not well liked there. He's been very disparaging of the football program there in the past, and it's been ugly, Matt. Ugly. You know, you did what, Lewisburg football 1 year, right?
I did. That was my yeah. previous stay here 2 yeah. years ago now.
Yeah, yeah, and did a brilliant job.
Thank you.
Well liked in every town you've gone to, making no enemies. Yeah, I'm impressed.
I try.
Yeah. Did they ever run a play where they saw what you saw?
Not that I recall.
Yeah. Yeah. Just wondering. Have to have some fun with it because he's been on this roll the last couple of weeks with the I was like, okay, well, hey. I mean, Sean, did you hear the one Sean did last week?
I did not.
We're doing this. Well, you know, well, I've been on the air. Well, I've done play-by-play. Well, I've done. Okay. I've done play-by-play. I've done this. I've done that. Okay. All right. And then Sarah ran a story about something with the Northumberland prison. And Sean says, I've been to prison. Sean, of all people, Sean said that.
I know,
that.
Right?
I mean, of all people, Sean said that. What? You said what? Oh.
Gotta love it.
So, right now he's throwing stuff in his office. He is respectfully submitted a play-by-play cut that we think is more about him than the play. Tell me I'm wrong.
Not wrong.
All right. Are we awaiting Matt Leon here? To have him on the show?
Not as of yet that I can see.
Okay. Well, they won yesterday. They won big yesterday. 34-7?
Yep, 34-7, and completely dominating performance on both sides of the ball. Carson Wentz, career high, 4 touchdown passes, 21-0 lead after the end of the first quarter, which I believe is only the 9th time in Eagles history that they had a 21-0 lead or more after one quarter. So they completely dominated this game. Minus a little bit of a shaky second quarter. You know, the Cardinals got back into it. But other than that, the defense shut everybody down, and they really the whole team really played well. And I think I got a lot of confidence that they can beat Carolina Thursday night. It's still a tough game. No Lane Johnson most likely is in the concussion protocol. It's on the road, you know, so we'll see. But it should be a good game Thursday night. 2-4-1 teams going at it.
Yeah, that should be terrific. I'm looking forward to that very, very much. But the short turnaround, boy, that is tough. Short turnaround like that, that's really difficult, the short turnaround. It really is. All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with more in a moment here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. All right. right. Welcome back. Brought to you by Purdy Insurance, Market Street and Sunbury. Go to purdyinsurance.com. We may not be billionaires like Sean and the Soup, but Dave Revson from Big Ten Network. Dave, great to have you with us.
I know how many dollars a billion is, Steve.
Yes, you and I
but
both do.
Beyond that, yes, yes. I'm always amazed when you say to people, it's 1,000 million. Like, do you understand how much that is?
I know.
We think of a million as a lot, and this is 1,000 million.
1,000 million.
But anyway, yeah, yeah.
Big Ten, you watch Penn State and Iowa. Iowa is very, very good. I mean, very good, especially in that environment. What did you think of the two teams when it was all said and done?
Well, obviously, look, you know, you're very fortunate to win if you're Penn State. But as you said, part of that is a function of how good Iowa is. Particularly, I thought they played really well defensively. And you still look at the number of yards that Barkley and Penn State accumulated. I mean, it speaks to how overwhelming Penn State's offense is. But, yeah, I mean, I was impressed with both teams. You knew going in that's a really hard place to win. Three straight top five teams have fallen there. There's a reason for that. So I came away impressed with both teams. I think people who are discounting Iowa to a certain extent in the West do it at their own peril, although obviously their schedule is very challenging, and that was part of it. You know, the crossover games are really tough for them.
Yeah.
And I continue to believe that Penn State's the best team in the Big Ten. But, again, I just think that the league is more competitive than it has been. It continues to get more competitive these last two or three years. I think we've really seen it get to that point, and that's a double-edged sword. I mean, it helps you on one hand because I think the perception of the Big Ten has improved nationally, but it also means that there are a lot of tough games on your schedule. It's not just one or two that you have to worry about.
Now, the odd thing is about Barkley, I mean, on our broadcast, is whether it's a pregame show or postgame show, Jack Ham and I really ask James Franklin about him. I've kind of sort of realized that in the postgame. Like, maybe we ought to ask him a little bit more about him. Look, you watch all these highlights and so forth. What does he bring to the table that even makes you sit back and go, wow?
Well, Steve, I will never forget. I mean, we've been, as you know, to hundreds of football practices now.
Yeah.
In our Big Ten tour. And so they do all kind of tend to meld together to a certain extent, right?
Sure, like, right, exactly.
Look, what did we see at, you know, Indiana in 2011? I don't remember. But I will always remember the moment where I was standing on the sidelines a couple of years ago with Howard. We were in the indoor practice facility at Penn State. It was raining outside, and we were kind of standing on the sideline, and they run a pitch play to Barkley, and he turns the corner, and he puts a move on a linebacker and zooms past us on the sideline. And Howard and I turned to each other, and we're like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, like, that guy is good.
Yes.
And so, you know, that's one that will always stand out for me, kind of the first time that I saw him. I mean, I think it's a combination of things. He's obviously incredibly strong. His ability to change direction on the dime is remarkable. He's very fast. He's got great hands. He's just kind of the whole package. And he's a great kid, as you know. I mean, that part of it is yeah, really refreshing, too, just kind of how nice and how humble he is. And so he is everything. I mean, he is the entire package. I guess that's what stands out about him. It's not that he's a power back. It's not that he's a speed back. It's not that he's a back with, you know, good third down back. He's all of those things. And,
yeah,
and that's just so unusual that you would see it in one package.
When you look at the Nebraska situation, Sean Eichhorst is out. Mike Riley was able to get through last weekend. How do you view that situation right now?
Well, I view it as tenuous, I think. I hate to say that because I love Mike Riley. And let's let him coach the season.
I agree with you.
You know, I mean, like, all you have to do is look at James Franklin a year ago, right, when Sandy Barber was coming out and giving him a vote of confidence. Mm-hmm. And how crazy that seems now in hindsight, but it was warranted at that time. I mean, she needed to do that because there was some unrest and there was some grumbling in State College. So let's see how this year plays out for them. I do think they're getting better defensively. We've definitely seen that here in these past couple of weeks. So, we're all rooting for Mike Riley. I mean, anyone who knows Mike Riley is rooting for him because he's such a good guy. But it was a little bit of an out-of-the-box hire, to say the least, by Sean Eichhorst. I mean, this was not a guy with a proven track record at a big-time program.
Mm-hmm.
He was someone who had kind of been off the beaten path, and he'd been in the NFL. But, you know, he hadn't proven that he can compete year in and year out at the level that Nebraska wants you to. Now, part of that is that he hadn't been in a program like Nebraska. I mean, you need a first time to, mm-hmm. to get an opportunity like that. So I'm hopeful that he will figure out a way to turn it around, but I'm concerned because it's obvious that what's been happening isn't good enough for Nebraska's fans. And I guess to a certain extent, nor should it be, although I look back at that first year and I think if a couple of those games had gone a little bit differently, we'd be singing a very different tune with him.
At Michigan, obviously, Wilton Spate must do certain elements either in practice or in film or whatever that has Jim Harbaugh, who knows quarterbacks, saying, that's my guy. What did you think, though, of John O'Korn's performance when he stepped in against Purdue?
Well, I thought he was much better than Wilton Spate has been to this point this year. Now, Wilton Spate had a pretty good year last season.
He did.
And I think, you know, the issue is they don't have as much talent at receiver as they did last year. And now they've lost, you know, one of their best guys for the season. And so I think that's part of it. I mean, you know, Amar Darbo can make you look really good. Jake Butt can make you look really good. So if you're inexperienced in that position and you're not getting the same kind of play and then, you know, you lose Drake Black, that hurts. But O'Korn went in those same circumstances and definitely moved the team better. And I did think looked better. He doesn't look better at practice, I'll tell you that. I mean, Spate looked like the better guy both years that we were there in,
right.
in practice. So, you know, it's just one day. I mean, obviously it's just a snapshot, so who knows what every other practice looks like. But I don't know. I was impressed with Spate last year, and I still think he can be good. But, I think they've got some deeper problems on that offense. I mean, they're not as explosive on the flank as they were a year ago. They're certainly not as good at tight end, although they are talented there. The line lost some really good players. So there are some issues. And I just think, again, I'm not saying that, you know, you're blaming it on the quarterback, but I do think it's easy to blame it on the quarterback, and sometimes it's deeper than that. And all that being said, O'Korn looked better, clearly, yeah. on Saturday than Spate has.
Well, part of the question is he grew up 35 miles from here. So he grew up in Huntington, just south of State College. So that's why I wanted to ask about him.
Right.
And the Purdue story, we'll see how it plays out. But how interesting is it to see them suddenly get competitive with a lot of people?
I think it's great. I mean, it was amazing to be on campus, Steve, on Saturday. We did our tailgate pregame show from there, and the buzz on the campus. I mean, they just haven't been that excited about football really since the Big Ten Network started,
yeah.
right? And we're on our 11th year, and I can't remember any kind of excitement that even comes close to that, any kind of buzz that comes close to that for Purdue football. And, you know, Purdue had a pretty nice run in there with Joe Tiller. I mean, it was a good, competitive Big Ten program. A team mm-hmm. went to the Rose Bowl, and an all-time great quarterback in Drew Brees. And they do have a decent football tradition, you know, certainly with the Cradle quarterbacks and a lot of the really good players who have come through there. And they want to be good. They want to embrace it. I mean, is it a basketball school? Probably more than football. But they have a rich football history. And so, I mean, he's really good. You know, Jeff Brohm is a great X and O coach. I think that's become apparent. But, you know, at a certain point, talent takes over, and that's what happened in the second half against Michigan. Is, you know, Don Brown's a great X and O coach, too.
Yeah.
So, you know, you're matching wits with a guy who is a master, and he's got better chess pieces than you do in the chess match. But I'm enthused. I mean, we need more competitive programs, particularly in the Big Ten West and teams that can make some noise.
Well, one of the teams in the Big Ten East is more competitive, it seems, is Indiana. That's who Penn State has next. What's been your thought on them so far? Because it's been a little disjointed because of the FIU game being removed.
Yeah, but I mean, I think they're a better team. We certainly saw that in the Ohio State game. You know, that they were able to hang with the Buckeyes and lead, you know, deep into the third quarter in that game. You know, Richard Leggo needs to figure it out a little bit. He threw a ton of interceptions last year. We saw some shades of that, some signs of that again in the Virginia game. And then they brought in Peyton Ramsey, and he was great. They don't have quite as good a running attack as they've had. I think to a certain extent what happened this weekend might maybe be fool's gold. I mean, we'll kind of see. But, you know, you're playing a really low level FBS team. So I'm not putting too much stock into that. I think against their top competition, they've had trouble running the ball. And if you end up in that situation, you know, then it's you're behind the chains quite a bit, and then I think it becomes really difficult for your quarterback. But they're talented. Simi Cobbs is as good a receiver as you're going to see in the Big Ten. I mean, he's in that conversation. He's really good. You know, they've got some talent, no doubt about it, and they've gotten dramatically better on defense. Allen's done a really nice job there.
Dave, it's always a pleasure. Appreciate the time, and always appreciate the work.
All right. Right back at you, Steve. Always fun to be on with you, and have a good call this weekend.
Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motor Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Our privilege to bring in Michelle Marciniak, who had a great career at the University of Tennessee for Pat Summitt, and now is doing something to honor Pat Summitt and to help others along the way. Michelle, we welcome you to the show. It's great to have you with us.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
She is, by the way, the co-CEO of Cheeks. It's great to have you on board, and we wish you best of luck, by the way, with that venture. It sounds like a great venture you've put together there.
Yeah, we're really growing. It's a performance fabric bedding company, and we started, you know, probably seems like a long time ago now, but it takes a long time to build a brand, and you know, we've got really great performance fabric products for the, you know, for your home, and we've been developing a Cheeks sleep system over the last couple of years. So now we not only offer sheets, which is how we got into the business, but the entire bed ensemble of how all the fabrics work together, and with pillows, performance pillows, mattress pads, duvets, you know, comforters, duvet covers, and we just launched our performance mattress line, where we offer four different mattresses and a bed in the box concept as well. So we're we're busy, we're excited, you know, at the growth of the brand, and just trying to take it one day at a time, but you know, push forward and get as much done as we can.
We wish you nothing but the best with that. Nothing but the best.
Pedal
for Pat, which will be October 17th through the 28th. Now, as somebody who in his career so far has announced 1,036 Penn State basketball games, she won 1,098, I mean, which is amazing.
It is.
And I'll get into that in a moment. I want to get to the fundraiser, though. How'd you come up with the idea of a mile for each one of Pat's wins?
You know, it was the co-chair of the event, Josh Crisp, really was the, you know, the founder of the idea, and he just he was a Tennessee guy his whole life. He runs and owns a few nursing homes in the Southeast, and you know, of course, his patients are, you know, they're laden with you know, majority of them with some form of dementia or Alzheimer's at the end of their life, and you know, Josh just, he really wanted to do something to honor Pat. He really respected her, and so I saw what he was doing in Pedal for Pat on Twitter, and I contacted the Pat Summitt Foundation. I said, who's this Josh guy doing this Pedal for Pat ride? Because I would do something like this in a heartbeat, and I absolutely love, you know, the physical aspect of this. And so I talked to Josh, and you know, he probably spent 15-20 minutes talking about his passion behind the event, and I just told him, I said, I'm in, I'm all in. And it just, the memory that is in my heart and my mind of Pat, and just the meaning behind this ride. And, you know, it was so hard to, when she was going downhill, you know, for the last 5 years, before she died, because you really couldn't do something like this because she was still alive. So you can't treat her like she's gone when she's not. And, you know, it's just, it's the severity of this disease. You knew she was going to go. And so then once she died, I had like a year of grieving where I didn't talk about Pat to anybody. I just didn't even bring it up. And this idea from Josh really sparked in me, and it was like a lightning bolt that hit me. It was just like, I have to do this. I will do this. There's no question about it. And I want to do the entire ride. So I'm not, he thought I was going to say I'll do 100, you know, because we're riding 1,098 miles. That's about 100 in 12 days. So it's about 100 miles a day. And when I told him I'm all in for the entire ride, he almost dropped the phone. He's like, really? Yep. So it's so super meaningful to just honor Pat like this. But also this awful disease. I mean, it's sixth leading cause of death, you know, in this world. And it's probably speeding up, you know, to be less than that soon. And so we need to do something. That's for sure. And when it hits you personally, like it hit me, you know, with my coach and, you know, other people's families, it's just, you know, you have to act.
Yeah, I lost my father to it in 2004. And yeah, everybody reacts in different ways. But I felt when he passed away finally, I felt like I'd lost him twice.
Interesting.
Yeah. You know, yeah, because, you know, you go in there and you tell me, I'm sure the last time you saw Pat, did she even know who you were? Or was, you know, because I know with my father, the last couple of years, he didn't know who I was. I could have been the janitor.
Yeah, no, she didn't know.
And that's hard. 100%, and that's hard.
No.
Yeah, that's really, really hard. What did Pat teach you along the way? And it might be a list, Michelle. If it's a list, I'd love to hear the list. That sticks with you every day. And it's part of the fabric of who you are.
I would say the main thing is just to, like, absolutely put your heart on the line and every single day. You know, because nothing in her playbook, like, nothing was ever good enough. And you can't, you know, at a certain point it's just like something has to be good enough, but it's what made her great, you know. And so she was do it again. Great. Do it again. Good job. Not there yet. Do it again. Because you have to do it again perfectly before you can actually master something. And so that was her philosophy, was if you're going to master something, and I need you to master your position as a point guard, as a leader, and I need you to do things like you're doing them literally in your sleep. You know, like they become such secondhand nature to you, you know, as a point guard. So, you know, I think she really stressed work ethic, and not only working, you know, hard, but working smart. You know, you can go out and, you know, even with the cycling, like, you can ride, you know, X amount of hours, but how many miles did you get in the X amount of hours? Mm-hmm. Because if you only got 10, that's really bad. If you put in 60, you know, you're putting in really smart hours, and you're working hard, and you're getting the benefit, you know. And so I think for me, Pat was, she was powerful in my life, and she was so tough, she was tough on everyone, let me just say that, but she was exceptionally tough on her point guards, and she was exceptionally tough on me, because I think she saw a little bit of herself in me, and she always wanted to push me to my limit, because that's how she was brought up, that's how her father pushed her, and she didn't know any different than, I always say, you come to Tennessee and you're not winning ball games, you're competing for championships, and she made that very clear. So there was a if you don't like it, go. That's okay. Yeah. You can leave, you know, that's perfectly fine with me, because we're gonna do this my way. way, and I'm going to get you to lockstep with me, believe in what I'm doing, and it's going to be painful at times. And it was. But you know what? She was, like, just successful. I mean, so successful in her approach. And that becomes more and more... I didn't like it.
Right,
at times,
sure.
I hated it. But the older I've gotten, and you know, somewhat with kids in society today, a little bit more relaxed attitude, I think. You know, it's just like if you want to be on top, you have to make sacrifices of your time, you know, and your personal life. And there's certain things that you have to do in order to say, all right, I want to be the best, and if I want to be the best, I'm willing to do this. And that was always her. That was always her mentality, and she held our feet to the fire like that all the time.
What does it tell you, though, in a moment of reflection here? And obviously, we all saw your career. You had a great career there. But what does it tell you that someone who understood greatness saw a little bit more in you and pushed you to get to that point?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I feel honored. I mean, think about what you just said. I mean, you're talking about the greatest coach of all time, you know, and I was in the throes of her stares 24/7 for years of my life. I mean, yeah. There's no one that got stared down more than I did, and finger pointed in the face and a jersey tug. Probably couldn't get away with that in today's world, but you know, it was just like she was. I mean, I feel incredibly blessed to have been, you know, to have experienced just her way. I talk about her aura, you know, just like the way that she was. She was extremely professional every time. She was gracious. She was humble, you know, and yet, you know, she was teaching us these, you know, these lessons. And the good thing about me, and I think she knew this, I was a sponge. I was paying attention. Mm-hmm. I was listening to everything that she was saying, and I was watching everything she did. And so she had someone, I think, to answer your question, it was like she knew that there was something in me that wanted to be the best.
That's,
you know,
right.
And that's why, I mean, I think she saw that in me, and she was just like, okay, I got you, and she did, and I'm going to get you to where I think that you want to be, and I know that you can be, and I believe in you, but it's not going to be easy.
But there's also transitions in life as well. You transition out of the program. She transitions going forward. You now become a former player that did great things for her along the way, which also did great things for yourself as well. But did that then change the relationship, and did you then see a different side of Pat Summitt?
I did. That's a great... It's really... That transition point is so true. I mean, when I came... When I first got out of playing, you know, I was a professional basketball player, and then I coached at the University of South Carolina as an assistant coach, and then I had to coach against her and recruit against her, and that was just stupid. That was like the most ridiculous thing, you know, that anyone can possibly do, because it's just not, you just don't win. She had this, you know, she had the entire, you know, world, you know, she's eight, you know, national championships at the time, and I was trying to recruit against her, and I mean, it was just no contest. And so I was really miserable when I coached at South Carolina against her in the SEC. I think it affected our relationship. I wasn't that close to her at that time for those 5 years because we were competitors, oddly. I mean, this happens to a lot of her former players. She becomes your friend, your coach, your mentor, your friend, and then all of a sudden you go coach and you're recruiting and trying to win games against her, and she just drums you, and it's not very fun, and it's hard to have that, keep that, you know, that relationship, you know, because you're in a competitive situation, but it's still there. I mean, you've built something over the years. It's still there, and You know, I think for me, where I got close to Pat was when I ventured off and became, a entrepreneur and co-founder of Sheiks, because, you know, I went and did something that nobody that she's coached has done. There have been some entrepreneurs that have spun out of the Lady Ball program, but, you know, in her eyes, it was like, you took this concept, you took something that was, you know, it didn't exist, and you've breathed life into it, and you made it out of something, and you branded it, and you know she was just really
impressed. You had a creative vision.
Right. But it's no different than her creative vision for Tennessee, you know, and
that's
I think she may have seen that, right, as well. And so she was so supportive of, I mean, she bragged to people. She'd call me when she had friends over, she had family over. She'd call and say, I got everybody in the house sleeping in Sheiks, and Michelle, why don't you tell them about Sheiks? And, you know, and so she'd buy them, and she'd gift them, and she'd call me, and it was really amazing. And so that's when I really, and I don't want to say that it didn't happen when I was coaching, but it was just, I was in like a lull moment with her. And then once I became, you know, stepped outside of basketball, it was like she respected me in a whole different way and really appreciated, you know, and I learned all the lessons that she taught me, I'm using as an entrepreneur. As a leader of a company, I mean, she led her program. I'm leading my company in the same, you know, in a very similar fashion. And I've taken good notes over the years. And I think I'm more successful, obviously, because of having been impacted by Pat Summitt.
And it's amazing when you have that breakthrough moment yourself internally, suddenly all of it becomes a slice of gold to you. That's beautiful. Finally, it's patsummit.org. That's where you can go to get the details for this. It's October 17th through the 28th. People can make pledges to this. You're going to do all 1,098 miles in honor of one of the truly great coaches in any sport at any time. I wish you nothing but the best of and I wish you nothing but the best of luck with Sheiks. It sounds like it's an incredible concept. I know it's a fight every day because that's what business is like, but I want to wish you nothing but the best, and also for giving us some time today. I really appreciated it.
Thank you so much. I enjoyed the conversation greatly.
Same here. Thank you, Michelle.
Thank you.
One of the truly great players in the history of the game, because she played for one of the truly great coaches in the history of the game. That's Michelle Marciniak, and what a player she was. But listening to how Pat Summitt pushed and pushed, and the reason Pat Summitt pushed is that she saw she saw a top end in Michelle that maybe even Michelle didn't realize she had, that there was a little bit more she could give. And Michelle gave her all she could during the course of her career. That's why they won. And now she's out there understanding every day you got to put it out there to the top end every single day in business. And that's why Pat Summitt was so proud of what she's doing today, because of that creativity to be that entrepreneur and come up with a concept and then have the guts to make it work. Pat Summitt did that in women's basketball. Michelle Marciniak's doing that in her business. We'll come back with more in a moment on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
Back here on the Monday afternoon edition of the Steve Jones Show here on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Matt Catrillo here with you, taking you the rest of the way after day one of another week of the Steve Jones Show. Getting back to the Red Sox-Astros game that Steve and I were talking about earlier, Houston has taken the lead in that one. It's now 4-3 Houston, the top of the ninth, one out. Houston putting two aboard in the top of the eighth. So maybe Houston is only all of a sudden now just three outs away from closing out that series after falling behind 3-2 earlier in the ballgame when the Red Sox put two across the board in the bottom of the fifth. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. We're talking about Chris Sale, who actually got some time on the mound in relief today. He finished 4 2/3, giving up two runs and four hits, two earned runs, and struck out six. Did give up a home run. So that is 4-3 Astros now in the top of the ninth against the Red Sox as the Astros look to close out that series Then we also have the Nationals and the Cubs. They are back underway. That series is tied at one as the series now shifts to Wrigley, and that is no score in the top of the third in that one. The Nationals were able to tie it up in Game 2 with a win. And then later on, you have the Dodgers and the Diamondbacks at 10:08 tonight. That's going to be on TBS. The Dodgers looking to close out that series. They lead 2-0. It's Yu Darvish against Zach Greinke. Of course, Arizona defeating Colorado in the National League wildcard game. And then at 7:08 tonight, weather permitting, you have the Indians and the Yankees. The Yankees winning by the slimmest of margins last night, 1-0. A home run in the seventh inning by Greg Bird. And if the Yankees are going to have to get by Trevor Bauer again, who totally shut them down, just a 3 hits in Game 1 and a win for the Indians. And Luis Severino getting a second chance for the Yankees tonight. He will take the mound after only getting 1 out in the wild card game in his first career playoff start and was pulled very quickly. So we'll see if Luis Severino, the young Yankees ace, can bounce back from that one and get a big win for the Yankees and extend this to a Game 5 back to Cleveland. So that's a look at the MLB postseason as of right now. And now we're at 2 outs in the top of the ninth. Astros leading the Red Sox 4-3. So the Red Sox will be down to their final 3 outs of their season if they want to try to force a Game 5 back in Houston. Monday Night Football tonight should be an interesting game. You got the Minnesota Vikings at the Chicago Bears. It'll be Mitch Trubisky's first NFL start for the Bears after Mike Glennon started the first 4 games of the season for the Chicago Bears. So that will be an interesting one for sure. Monday Night Football tonight on ESPN. Don't forget to check out all of our show podcasts at stevejonesshow.com. You can also find us on Apple and Google Play as well for all the latest show archives. Plenty of good guests coming up later this week. Again, we'll have Bucknell football coach Joe Susan back on the show probably Wednesday or Thursday of this week. Sean Carey is working on that for you, and hopefully we'll have an announcement about that tomorrow when Coach Susan will rejoin us. Bucknell getting ready to take on Cornell up in New York this week after a week off after that loss to Monmouth at home a couple of weeks ago at Christie. Plus other great guests coming up this well as we continue to get ready for Penn State against Michigan in 2 weeks from now. Penn State with the bye. Steelers and Eagles talk this week. Plenty to talk about with both teams. And a lot more here on the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK.